So we really hope you enjoyed the film. What we're going to do now is, as Karina mentioned, we're doing now a live podcast recording. So at the Bechdel Test Fest, we ran a podcast series called Who Is She? And every episode is dedicated to a woman in film who has changed the landscape of cinema for the better, which I think we can agree is very much something that Mati Diop has done over her career as an actress and as a filmmaker, and also as the first black woman to be entered into competition at Cannes this year, where she also won the grand prize. So incredible feat, incredible accomplishment for her. So what I'm going to do is ask a few initial questions to my Bechdel Test Fest partners in crime. So we met Karina earlier. If you would say hello again, Karina, please.
Hello again.
There we go. And we also have Caitlin Quinlan with us.
Hi.
And we're recording this live. And what I'll do also is encourage audience participation. I'll ask you questions as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And we also are quite well versed. So we also did a retrospect of Mati Diop's short films last year. So we'd like to think, not on an academic level, we're not going to say that, but we're pretty well versed in her work also. So we'd love to hear your thoughts and questions and basically make this as much of a cinema-wide conversation as we can. So what I'll start off by doing is asking the titular question for our podcast, and I'm opening this up to Karina. So Karina, if I can ask you, Mati Diop, who is she?
Thank you very much. Before we start, can I just get a round of applause if you enjoyed the film, because I just think we need a moment for how beautiful that last few hours were, because it's just so stunning. This is the second time I've watched it, and it really does stand up on a second watch, so I do recommend you watch it again. It is on Netflix, but I'm very glad that we are here today watching it on the big screen the way I love. So Mati Diop, who is she? She is phenomenal. obviously. So she's a very young filmmaker. She's French, she lives in Paris, and she's mixed race. Her mother is white and her father is from Senegal. He came over from Senegal to France, where he met Mati's mother. And she comes from a very creative background, which I think you can see in her work is really expressed in so many different ways. So her uncle is a famous filmmaker who made Tuki Buki, and her father is a famous jazz musician. But I think a lot of the time we don't actually get to hear about her mother as well, because her mother is actually also the creative force in her life, which I feel isn't always picked up as much as I'd like in some of the interviews. But her mother was a director of commercials. And by her own account, she says that this is when commercials were a lot more artistic, and so she had a lot more creative flair in that. And she was also a photographer. So if you can imagine, all of those influences on her work have obviously created this very visual eye for what we see up on the screen today. And she used to want to be a singer. Her favourite singer was Aaliyah. One of my favourite singers was Aaliyah. She's just an incredible filmmaker, and what with her being, what she represents as being one of the first black women to make a stand in Cannes, I think that's just incredible.
Yeah, extraordinary feat. Mm. Caitlin, what does she do?
So the film that you've just seen, Atlantics, is her debut feature. But prior to this, she, as Beth mentioned, has been an actress, probably most recognisably in Claire Denis' 35 Shots of Rum. Mm. But in terms of her short film work, the short film Atlantique that really preceded this feature and sort of fed into it was her directorial debut, first short, which I think in the sort of interview you saw before, she explains briefly, but it's a... She's just listening and observing the story of a man who has attempted to make the crossing from Africa to Europe, and to make that sort of, you know, that migration, and talking about the trauma and the danger and the, you know, ultimately the death of people that he knew and, you know, would go on to affect him. So that was her first short, and she then went on to make some others that were very much related to Senegal and to her family life. So Karina mentioned Tuki Buki. So she has a short film called A Thousand Sons, which kind of explores the life of the lead actor of that film, and how the kind of life that he led since post making that work. But she's also done things like a film called Snow Cannon, which is very much just about, it's a coming of age story for two white girls, really, in the French Alps. And actually, I was very lucky to be able to interview Matty recently, and we were talking about making the move from shorts to features, and I think Snow Cannon initially was the film she was going to adapt into a feature, but it ended up, she had the realization, I guess, that the world didn't need another story about French white girls, and actually what needed to be done was to expand upon Atlantique and the stories that she'd heard in that film, and the women that, as she mentioned in the interview again, that were left behind in those scenarios. So that's kind of how she went on to make that move. And obviously, it's given her enormous success. Beth, you were at Cannes and got to experience seeing her, on the Croisette. And
yeah, that was extraordinary. So I was there for the premiere, and to see her. A lot of filmmakers, I find, have a real ego on them and tend to kind of do their own thing. But she strode up the Croisette with her cast arm in arm, all of the cast, who were just so excited to be there. A lot of them were non-actors and kind of cast very locally. So she kind of strode up with them all arm in arm, and it was such a powerful image. She got a standing ovation before the film even started. So that's how highly regarded she is within that realm.
I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous you got to see that.
Yeah, it was beautiful. So this is the contextual part of the podcast. And what we're going to do now is to move into a bit more of an interpretive section, where we just simply go into why we love the person that we're talking about. So we get to fangirl massively here. And so that we don't become too unnoted here, we would love to open this out to you. We have our fourth member, Steph, who is just here waving. She's waving, but she has purple hair. You're not missing her anytime soon. But she has, we'll give her a microphone, and we would really, really like to hear your thoughts and feelings on this, and try and make this as varied. We just don't want to hear our voices too much, to be honest. So we'd love to hear from you. Just raise a hand, we can guide you. And
even just some first reactions that you may have thought of whilst watching this. I think, has anyone seen Atlantiques, the short? I really recommend seeing that, because between the two of those films, and how was it, 10 years between the two?
Yes, so 2009, I think, Atlantique, the short, was...
But there's a connection with that, just in terms of what she has. So she's, what I'm getting from this is that she's very preoccupied with the themes of migration and how important that is to her, and especially what Caitlin was saying about how Snow Cannon isn't something that she wanted to build upon. As she got older, and as she's thinking about the political opportunity with filmmaking, she really took that opportunity to expand on the original short and really feed into a lot of what was making her think about migration, especially migration from the 70s, which is when she Tuki Buki is talking about, is so much of a different theme then. There was more of a romance in migration back then, as opposed to now, where people are kind of going to places because they have to, or they're fleeing. But she talked about how in the 70s the migration was much more of a, we're bored, we'd like to go somewhere else, we want to really make something of ourselves. Or, like, say, Windrush, they were invited, and there was a real sense of opportunity there. However, I think it's such a beautiful representation of the migration of migration, if you like, the migration of the conversations that we're having. And I think for that, it's just such an important film within the canon of how we look at people moving from place to place.
I think what was really interesting in what Matty said in the opening interview that you saw as well was when she spoke about this kind of conflict between her returning to Senegal as somebody who has freedom of movement and who has this circulation, this ability to circulate as freely as she wants to, and coming face to face with those who are trying to move for their own lives, really to save their lives. That's what they're doing. And in a way, she saw in the short Snow Cannon that she didn't have the potential to make a feature that mattered, that had a political message that would really, really change things. But in this film, I think what's really interesting is how she's acknowledged her own, you know, movement and privilege of movement in ways to really engage with those people that have lost so much, and to face up to those kind of those conflicts and those questions.
Yeah, it's interesting unpacking what she's talking about privilege as well, because she knows she fully understands that she's coming from a very artistic, creative family, and she's got those tools and that opportunity to create and be an artist. But she also, something that I kind of resonate on to a certain extent, how working with the canon of cinema, working with how that funnels representation, her as a mixed girl suddenly found herself through the medium of cinema having to, you know, even being classed a black filmmaker isn't something that she was used to, especially as somebody who is navigating a very white world. As a mixed girl, suddenly she was having to confront a lot of what her identity meant through the synopses and people's interpretations of her work and her identity, which I thought was very interesting. And a nuance in the conversation about race when you are a mixed race / black person making art.
I think she also does, even though she said she didn't want to make Snow Cannon into a feature, she does also manage to expand upon all of those things and add those elements of this coming of age story and this story about female growth and, you know, just coming to terms with the world around you very strongly into Atlantics. You know, she wanted to make this film about the girls who were left behind. And I think you see so many girls that are just not even, you know, people that you relate. I think she explained it. It's not people that she just relates to, but they're people that she knows, and they live these lives that she can understand, and she knows exactly they've been through. Mm-hmm. But you also get to see the character of Ada just kind of grow up and have to, you know, she's living her life. She's just trying to get on with things and go through a marriage and, you know, come to terms with the loss of love. And there's just so many universal themes in this that extend it even further beyond all of those, you know, already so powerful.
And she's a really, really respectful filmmaker. All of those people that you saw on screen today weren't, you know, she took a lot of time to find those people, but she actually went on to construction sites to make sure that the actors that were cast knew, and they weren't just acting, they were sympathizing, and they could truly understand what it was like to work on a construction site. And I thought this is really interesting method of making films and creating characters, is that she didn't write the script until she met the characters. So she cast the characters and then she wrote the script to make sure that that dialogue would fit with that personality that she had found, which I thought was a really interesting and really respectful way of putting people up on screen.
I would like to hear how people's expectations were met with the reality of this film, because I went in expecting a film very much about migration, and that's what we got. And then we also got something entirely enterprising and ambitious and completely beyond the realms of expectation. And I think it's so rare when you get to see something like that from a first-time filmmaker, from a black female filmmaker who is usually seen to have very little authority within certain industries. I would love to hear what people... Were you surprised by this film, I suppose, is what I'd like to hear.
Hello. I'm just sort of trying to gather my thoughts because I was completely blown away by it. I think it's the best film I've seen this year, like almost instantly. And I think what I'm really presently surprised by is at the moment in cinema, I just feel like, you know, everything is so polarized. And we have conversations time and time again about like representation, about this kind of thing, but it doesn't really mean anything. And we've got this, you know, essentially a European filmmaker who grew up in Europe. And I guess I was expecting a European version of a film that has been made in Senegal. And I don't think that's what this is at all. And I actually, like, I'm completely, like, really pleasantly dumbfounded that the trust that was put in her as a filmmaker to make this film, it feels like she made it exactly how she wanted to. And the fact that Netflix are behind this film is actually quite fascinating. And I think it's it deals with so many issues. I mean, like the kind of fantasy kind of thread going through it that like kind of touches on so many like sort of like African folklore and doesn't shy away from kind of themes that in European cinema I think people find quite hard to understand because it's so far away from Western understanding of the world. And I think that's what's so incredible about it. It just feels like she hasn't compromised at all, and I think that's incredible.
Yeah, I think that's what's so interesting about her work as well, is that she is definitely, you're absolutely right, she's definitely done this her way. And something that I read about what she's, in terms of the idea of what fantasy is, I thought was so fascinating, because she was like, fantasy for black film is different to fantasy for white film, because the realms are different, the structure is different. In this particular story, we have an impossible love, which shouldn't be impossible, but because of the ambitions of these young workers who are not being paid, not being looked after, and find themselves having to go to Spain for a better life. That's their fantasy, which I thought was really interesting to kind of break it down. And again, just acknowledge the privilege of what you have as a white filmmaker and what you can and can't do, or what you can. And also, I think it's also really interesting talking about, I guess, what you're both saying about classification. And I thought we were going to be, I think you're absolutely right. I thought, okay, what might be, but I think there's a love story going on here. Okay, that's fine. But then you're absolutely right. There's all this unpacking of, then there's sci-fi, and then it's a zombie movie, and then it's a love story. It's just so many things packed into one, and it really made me question why it is that I find myself wanting to know the genre of things and why that matters.
Yeah. I'd love some more. Yes. One there and then one there after. Thank you. Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
My name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
First time involved with a question and answer. I just thought I was coming to a movie at 5:30.
Thank you.
Three part question. First, it's not really a question. I was totally moved by the music, the soundtrack. Mm. And I'm interested as filmmakers how one goes about getting music. Do you have to... Does she create it? Does she hire artists? I couldn't read the French, so I'd be interested to hear your take on the music, because I thought it was just as important as many of those characters, the actors that were weren't really cast but were real. Second, I just wrote to my aunt that I was going to. They're sponsoring a black film festival in Sarasota, Florida. And I didn't know this was a black film or about anything. And so I sent her the link, which I looked up before I even came here, on YouTube. And she said she can't see it. They're not shown in the United States for whatever reason. That's the second part. And third, could you cast this film as a zombie film to the wider American audience and get distribution? These are all just questions that I had going through my head. And that's it. Only three. Thanks.
To start with the music, the score is by a musician called Fatima Al-Qadiri, and I think it's stunning. And one of my favorite things is how the sound of the ocean is so woven throughout the film, and it's become such a character. You know, it's this kind of really beautiful motif that is also so threatening and so harsh and awful and causes the deaths of, you know, all of these men that are traveling across. And yet it's still used in this such a beautiful way to really recall the sense of home. And not to hark on about how I spoke to Matty Diop, but when I spoke to Matty Diop,
she
yes, I spoke to Matty, my dear friend, but she described her kind of vision for the score and working with the composer to act as a kind of hymn for the lost boys, for the lost generation, which I think is such a beautiful kind of stunning image to think about for how the music works within this film.
Can you class this as a zombie movie?
I think it's very interpretive. I see it as quite supernatural because I associate zombies with eating brains.
But then I guess in answer to the two and the three question, unfortunately, yes, if we're going to go into distribution models, classifying via genre helps. It helps people understand. People are lazy. You know, we as audiences like to know what we're getting ourselves into. You know, if you're going to spend £10 on something, you want to know if it's going to be good. And you know generally, oh, I like zombie movies. Yeah, I'm up for this.
For context, so Karina worked in film marketing.
I do film distribution and marketing in my past job. But yes, absolutely, it's so much easier if you say yes, this is a zombie movie, because you can get then you can get your finance, then you can get your people in, and you know how to do the marketing campaign, and you know what images to put on the poster, etc. In terms of, I think Matty would hate that. Mm-hmm. I think she would hate it so much, because even in all the conversations that she's having around this film and the people that are asking her questions, as ever, as journalists, we're trying to get her to define her work, which, as an artist, you don't really want to do. You want to make it, put it out there, and let people breathe on it. And I think that is the best artists, when they're making it for themselves and letting the audience feed into it.
Hi. I'm kind of continuing on the theme of the magic realism, because I didn't actually know much about the movie going into it. I just knew that I wanted to see it. And so I wasn't totally surprised, because I think it was achieved in such a manner that totally fit with the tone of the film. But I was taken aback, because it really reminded me of this film I watched a while back that I haven't really heard many people talk about, called The Fits. And I probably haven't heard people talk about it because I haven't looked it up. But I adored that movie. It also has this kind of idea of sort of like female solidarity expressed through the means of magic realism, and I loved that. I loved it in this film. It felt really impactful to me, and for me it had nothing to do with the idea of the undead or kind of even the supernatural. For me it was just a way of articulating a really deep feeling that this film has about the shared experience of womanhood, of these women.
For sure. There's something I find fascinating about this film, and again is so moving, is this idea about how women are, and I think it's something that's spoken about in kind of even like literature and art and kind of social theory, even, is kind of how women are the bearers of trauma in their bodies, and how, you know, these things are actually manifest in their movements and in what happens to them. And that's, for me, what this film really represents. It's, you know, this generational and this current trauma that is moving in the bodies of the women, and they're the people that have to bear it, and they're the people that come for revenge, essentially. And I think The Fits is a really interesting comparison, because it's about, you know, how a body is affected by the, you know, the changes around them and these experiences. That to me is what this film really kind of picks at or draws upon, is this idea of women as bearers of trauma in their own bodies.
Do we know where we can watch The Fits? Does anyone know if that's available on any platform?
It might be on Netflix as well. Maybe not. Maybe I've made that up.
iTunes. Thank you. We might put that up. Also, actually, Caitlin, while I've got you, you managed to source all of the... Which films are available readily to stream, do you know? And do you know where people can find the short films?
So a few of the short films are on Amazon Prime, actually. So you can rent them. One of her shorts is actually on YouTube, a short called... So I think Big in Vietnam is on YouTube, but Snow Cannon and Atlantiques, the short that preceded this, both you can find on Amazon Prime for sure, at the minute anyway.
I think we should, let's tweet that out after this.
Yes,
episode,
yeah,
so
yeah,
people
yeah.
can go away and watch it, those. Certainly. We'd love to hear some more thoughts, reactions. I just want to know how people, let's go. We've got two?
Okay. Hi, I would like to come back to the theme of immigration. For me, it was, because we are kind of used to immigration that is kind of our European-centered, when people move around. And it's also, in some cases, economical. But this is completely different level, when the people are not being paid for 3 months. And another thing that quite... There are two more things that surprised me. When the girls ask the manager or the owner of the hotel to pay 32 million, I didn't know how much that is. Yeah. But that shows how big the inflation is in this country. And also another thing that I observed is the buildings. They don't have glasses in the windows. And all these things that we kind of take for granted are not there. This is just my comment. And that's completely shows different level of immigration and also different level of living and causes of this immigration.
Those are definitely things I hadn't considered, so thank you. That's really insightful.
Yeah, I think you're right. And one of the things that Matty said about how, you know, you've got the big building in the background, it looks like Dubai, and she was just amazed at how Dakar was basically slowly modelling itself on this vision of big shiny buildings that that basically represent wealth and power. And then right adjacent, you've got all these work sites and workers working all hours, looking very exhausted. And she, after delving into that story, they're not even getting paid very much. I don't know what the currency rate is, but I'm sure it's not $32 million. Mm-hmm. but yeah, you're absolutely right. It's an amount that is obviously a lot that wasn't being paid and wasn't being honoured.
Hiya.
Hi.
Yeah, this film blew me away. I haven't had this feeling experiencing a work of art. I think the closest it's come to is reading Chimamanda Adichie's book Americana, which speaks a lot about the migration experience in a very complex and multifaceted way. It's interesting, we touched a bit earlier on about fantasy. And for me, the fantastical elements of this film is actually seeing black bodies humanized and the kind of universal themes of love, of womanhood, of conflict, of... yeah, all of those experiences told in a very humanizing way in black bodies. And it's rare to experience that in cinema for me, even in this day and age where we're big on representation in film and art more broadly. I also wanted to touch a bit about the supernatural elements with the zombies. I actually thought that was closer to reality because the migration experience leaves a lot of loss behind. And it lingers on in people's stories. And being able to capture that sense of the people who have left still being there and the experience of separation still being there in people's everyday life, that for me was closer to reality than even though it's represented in kind of the supernatural fiction. And then it's interesting, I'm an environmentalist, I work in climate change, and our interaction with the natural environment, humans' interactions with the natural environment is so deep and so complex. And I think when you look at things like the migration, the transatlantic slave trade, there's so much to it. And when I was in Senegal and I was looking over the Atlantic Ocean, it's just... she just captures so well these stories that in our relationship to the environment that just goes beyond being a consumer or a producer in the economy. She really touches on the human elements of things, and I'm just so blown away by this representation.
I'm so glad.
Totally agree. Yeah, and she. If you look at, and I hope you do get a chance to watch her other work, because if you like this, you'll love everything else, because it's all strung together with the themes of the ocean. And I would say she's a visual poet. And the things she said that the things that she can't say in dialogue, she uses the ocean, because it's such, you'll see, you know, it's peppered throughout the film and in all its different tempos, and it just says so much. And sometimes it's just good to have that visual representation of the sea and what that means, and it, in terms of creating space between people. And yeah, you will love her other work for sure. You really will. Yeah, I think you've raised some incredible comments for sure, because I too, in the opening, just seeing those, you know, Ada and Suleiman kissing and being so close, and how closely shot that was filmed up sitting on the beach. It was just such a refreshing, because we don't see that. We don't see enough of that. And I think the representation of black bodies is so, it's just not there as much as it should be. And when it is, it's just so nourishing and beautiful. And yeah, it needs to see more of it, really. And
I really think that love is kind of at the crux of this film, like completely for me, the supernatural elements and that sort of, yeah, that sci-fi, that sort of, you know, dabbling in sci-fi is really powerful and important in the story. But for me, it's that ending, it's that moment of Suleiman being able to return to his love and Ada being reunited with her love. And that is kind of, I think at the heart of what really counts in this story, and the fact that he doesn't come back through her body in the way that the other men come back through the other women. He finds a way to be reunited with her, and to have that story painted on screen so beautifully and so it's wonderful. I think it's so powerful the way that operates in the film.
We are out of time, but thank you again. Spoiled with your opinions in your reception,
thank you.
And we're so pleased that you enjoyed this film as much as we did. We are the Bechdel Test Fest. Find us on social media. We've got a few other episodes of the podcast. We've got Joanna Hogg, we've got Josephine Decker and Regina Hall, there are other subjects. And we have some surveys at the back if you had a few minutes to fill those in to relay back so we can improve our events moving forward. Enjoy your Saturdays and your weekends, and thank you very much.
'Who Is She?, a Bechdel Test Fest podcast, is a Bechdel Test Fest production. It was written and hosted by Beth Webb and produced by Stephanie Watts, with additional support from Karina Antrobus and Caitlin Quinlan. Our music was written and produced by Zoe Mead. Check out her band Wildest on all major streaming platforms.